Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox with another Patrick McManus read. But boy, what a difference does a day make. So my last recording, I was lamenting so many hunts being kind of up in the air. And one of them got nailed down. I got a text Monday night that I have an elk voucher for the same unit that I drew when I hunted the 5-foot bull video. So man, to say I'm ecstatic about that news is an understatement. Already been dreaming and scheming and losing sleep about it, and packed and unpacked, you know, in my mind, my backpack, and figuring out what equipment to use and different tactics that I'll employ, and trying to get a cameraman and caller team together, and still working on that. But boy, yeah, pretty crazy. I'm going back, baby. So pretty stoked about that. Now if I can just find out about my mule deer tag for Nevada, and then to replace my elk hunt. My wife doesn't know about this one yet, so keep it on the DL. I'm trying to get together a hunt north of the border, if the border up there will ever open, for mule deer. So I don't know, that one's still up in the air, but we'll have to see if that one will come to play. Hopefully they'll open the border to Canada and I can head up there in October and chase mule deer around. But like I said, we'll see how that all plays out. But in the meantime, for sure, I've got a Colorado elk hunt and a Colorado deer hunt now. So crossing my fingers on that. Aside from that, I think we'll dive in without much more small talk. This one's from Never Sniff a Gift Fish, Share and Share Alike. The sharing of a single big game animal between two hunters is at once the most delicate and the most complex problem encountered in hunting, with the possible exception of deciding whose vehicle to drive on the hunt. It may be useful to examine the problem in some detail. Let us begin with a hypothetical situation. As is well known, an elk that is shot dead within 15 feet of your hunting vehicle will still pull himself together enough to gallop to the very bottom of the steepest canyon within 5 miles. This is known as the elk's revenge. Assume you have just shot such an elk. You and your hunting partner, whom we'll call Bob, have tracked the elk to the bottom of the canyon. As you stand over the massive form of the felled but still magnificent animal, you become contemplative. One of the things you contemplate is how much bigger an elk is at the bottom of the canyon than it is 15 feet from your vehicle. Scientists have calculated that a wounded elk will add 50 pounds to its weight for every 100 yards it gallops down into a canyon. You now ask yourself two questions. How are you going to lug the elk back up to your vehicle? And two, why didn't you go golfing today instead of hunting? With 3 round trips each, you and Bob managed to pack out the elk section by section. Neither of you experience any extraordinary ill effects from the exertion other than seizing up major portions of your cardiovascular system. Bob lies wheezing by the side of the road, a haunch of elk still strapped to his back. You are walking around on your knees and mumbling about getting an elk shape and not caring if you never see another bleeping elk. At this point, you're willing to give the entire elk to Bob, provided that he lives. Your intimate association with elk meat over the preceding hours has diminished your appetite for the stuff and has resulted in a psychological malfunction known as excessive generosity. wisely you put off the decision of what share of your elk should go to Bob until you are rested and your mind has cleared. The culinary aspects of elk meat improve in direct proportion to distance and time from the packing out process. A week after the hunt, during which time the elk has been aging nicely in a cooler, the thoughts of all those steaks and roasts stashed away for the winter is intensely satisfying. There is still the problem of what portion of the elk should be Bob's share. You are now in the proper frame of mind to make this decision. Your reasoning goes something like this. For openers, you consider giving Bob half the elk. Once you've enjoyed a few moments of mirth over this ridiculous notion, you get down to serious figuring. Using half an elk as base, you deduct from it 5 pounds for each day remaining in the elk season, days in which Bob might very well shoot his own elk. You make further deductions for the amount of whining Bob did while packing out your elk. Then there is the matter of the unseemly phrase Bob blurted out when he first learned the elk you had shot was at the bottom of a 3,000-foot canyon. More deductions, all of them choice cuts. You don't forget Bob tripping over a log and cartwheeling down the slope with a hindquarter strapped to his packboard. That bruised a lot of meat, some of which was elk. Further deductions. When you finally total the figures, you discover that Bob now owes you approximately 1/4 of an elk. The charlatan hasn't even had the courtesy to mention the matter of his debt to you, and think you trusted him enough to let him help pack your elk out of a 3,000-foot canyon. Some gratitude. In the end, your calculations are for naught. Your spouse demands that you give Bob a generous share of the elk. You acquiesce reluctantly, but eventually conclude she was right, although this conclusion does not arrive until the middle of April, when even the thought of one more elk roast blights your day. "What's for supper?" you ask your wife. "Elk," she replies. "Ack," you say. "How about TV dinners? I'm sick of elk." "You shot it, you eat it." "I know. I'll call Bob. He would probably like some more elk." "Are you kidding?" Bob responds. "I'm fed up with my follicles with elk. I couldn't choke down another bite of elk if I lived to be 500. "Oh, yes, you can, and you are. You didn't take your full share of the elk. You packed it, and you're going to eat it." In this way, the problem of sharing a single big game animal between hunters usually resolves itself. My first encounter with the problem of sharing a big game animal occurred when I was 16. I was hunting with my cousin, Buck, who was several years older than I. At that time, Buck was at the height of his intellectual powers and knew all there was to know about hunting and most everything else. Some people are stingy with their knowledge and try to hoard it, but not Buck. He handed his out freely and voluminously and endlessly at all hours of the day or night, whether one was in the market for knowledge or not. Naturally, because of his towering intellect and absolute knowledge of all matters pertaining to hunters, Buck got to devise our field tactics. Shortly after dawn, as Buck was bathing my semi-consciousness with a steady stream of his hunting knowledge, I glanced up the side of the mountain to clear the glaze from my eyes and spotted 5 specks. The specks were moving. "Buck, there's a herd of mule deer up there," I shouted. Whoops. That was a whisper. "Buck, there's a herd of mule deer up there," I shouted. Since part of Buck's knowledge consisted of the natural law that he was the only one who could spot deer first, he dismissed my report with a chuckle and the comment that the specks I saw were probably on my glasses. Then he stopped the car and got out, casually, as if to stretch and satisfy a need for a breath of fresh air. He got back into the car, shook a cigarette from a pack, lit it, blew out the match. "There's a herd of mule deer about halfway up the mountain," he said. "When you're driving out to hunt mule deer, it's a good idea to stop every once in a while and check the slopes. Now, you take these deer here. We might have missed them if I hadn't stopped for a look around." Good buck. I'll try to remember that. Buck then laid out the tactics. "Now here's what we're going to do. You work your way up the mountain toward the deer. I'll drive around to the top of the mountain and wait on the road just in case they try to cut back over the ridge." "Why don't you climb the mountain and I drive around on the road?" because it wouldn't work that way. Besides, if the deer cut back over the ridge, I want to have the best shot to be waiting there. Oh, I got out to start working my way up the mountain, and Buck drove off, leisurely smoking a cigarette and fiddling with the radio dials. There was about a foot of new snow on the ground, and the climb was cold, slippery, and exhausting. Occasionally, a fir tree would unload a bough of snow down the back of my neck, and that didn't improve my mood either, nor did the thought of Buck sitting in the warm car on the top of the mountain, drinking hot coffee from the thermos and smoking and listening to the radio, while he gave the deer time to detect my presence and then retreat practically into his lap. But it didn't work out that way. All at once, I found myself right in the middle of the herd of mule deer. A nice little buck stepped out from behind a tree and stared at me, as if astonished to find a human being stupid enough to be climbing a snow-covered mountain that early in the morning. I downed him with a single shot. The rest of the herd raced off in all directions, except towards Buck. An hour later, I was back down at the road with my deer. Buck, who had witnessed the whole fiasco, as he called it, was waiting for me. He was hot, too. "Boy, that was dumb," he snarled, "shooting that itty-bitty buck when there was one three times as big in the herd. I knew I shouldn't give you the best chance, but since you're just a kid and all, I thought I'd do you a favor. Boy, did you blow it." We rode in silence all the way home, Buck occupied with what I could easily guess were dire thoughts, and I with gloating. When you're 16 and wear glasses and aren't that good at sports and spend a good deal of time in the company of an intellectual giant, you don't get much opportunity for gloating. But when you do, you savor it. "You just remember," Buck said after dropping me and my deer off at home, "part of that deer is mine." When I got around to cutting up the deer, I at first considered giving Buck a full half of it. On the other hand, I had my mother, grandmother, and sister to provide wild game for, and Buck lived by himself in an apartment. If he tried to eat half a deer all by himself, he would soon get sick of venison and wouldn't want to go deer hunting ever again. No, I told myself, it would be better if I only gave him a hindquarter. That would be about right for one person. On the other hand, steaks cut from the hindquarter of a deer are awfully good eating. Buck might use a venison steak dinner as bait to lure one of his girlfriends into his apartment. Then, in all probability, could lead to Buck and the girl committing a serious sin. Since my religion forbade even contributing to serious sin, I was not about to risk going to hell over a hindquarter of venison. No, sir. Buck would have to make do with a front quarter. But which front quarter? That presented no real difficulty. Because of Buck's interest in science, he would have been intrigued by studying the effect of a 30-30 slug on the shoulder of a deer. There was still a lot of good meat on the shoulder, too. Upon further consideration, I decided that Buck might prefer to forego his scientific studies and have the shoulder ground up into venison burger, so I ground up the venison for him. Well, that turned out to be an awful lot of venison burger for one person. I started dividing it up into neat little piles until I found the exact right amount that I thought would be suitable for Buck. I then left his share on the table while I went to deposit the rest of the venison in the cold storage locker. A few days later, I ran into Buck. "Hey, you little rat," he greeted me. "Where's my share of the deer?" I shook my head sadly. "You may have some trouble believing this, Buck," I said. "But while I was taking my share down to the locker, the cat got in the house and ate your share." Buck did not take the news well. All right. Patrick McManus solving all kinds of hunting problems there. Well, I hope you enjoyed that one, and we'll be back at it next week. Thanks for tuning in.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I come down for